When you hear the word sports medicine, you may think of athletes who play at the collegiate or even professional level. The truth is many people with joint or muscle pain could benefit from the expertise of a sports medicine specialist. On today's podcast, we're talking with Dr. Andy Bays about the field of sports medicine and what types of treatments this area of medicine can provide. We'll be right back with Dr. Bays after this.
Pain is the enemy. Motion is victory. Our Sarah Bush Lincoln Orthopedics and Sports Medicine team replaces knees and hips. We repair shoulders and spines. We mend people. With brilliant technology and simple human kindness, you can go home sooner to the things you love.
Trust the orthopedics team at Sarah Bush Lincoln.
Trusted, compassionate care.
Welcome to Health Styles, the podcast. This is Lori Banks, your host, and today we're talking about sports medicine, and I have Dr. Andy Bays with me today from Sarah Bush Lincoln Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Welcome.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, let's get started. Tell us a little bit about your background and the field of sports medicine for people who don't know anything about it.
Sure. My background, I'm from Charleston, went to school there, played all the different sports they offered. So athletics was something growing up that was near and dear to my heart. Got the chance to play college tennis and football at Eastern for a couple of years each. And so sports have been a big part of my life. Go to med school and knew that I never wanted to lose that. It was such an important part of my life that I knew I always wanted to be there in some fashion. And so sports medicine is really the perfect field for me in terms of getting to work with athletes. And what classically gets thought of is, you know, college football players or something like that. But athletes are so much more. It's the patient who wants to get up and walk from the car into the grocery store pain-free. We don't always think of it that way, but really that's what sports medicine is about. Is we call it sports med, but it's non-operative ortho. It's how can I help your body perform at its best with as little pain as possible, whether that's my knee aches or my back hurts or something like that. There's plenty of options in terms of sports medicine providers helping with those situations. Lots of non-surgical options that we have. And so sports medicine to me affords me the chance to help patients of really all walks of life, all athletic backgrounds, while still getting to spend some time on the sideline working with those high-level athletes too. So
okay,
it's a great combination.
I was going to ask, so you do see people of all ages and from all walks of life, so not just elite athletes.
Absolutely.
Regular people who injure themselves playing pickleball
yes,
on the weekends, right?
Exactly. The weekend warrior, or again, it could be plenty of times I'll see the, hey, I haven't exercised in 5 years because it hurts my knee to get up and get moving. What do I do to get my knee feeling better so that I can do that? Because I've got doctors harping at me that I need to be running, I need to be active and do all these things, but it hurts. So what do I do? And that's where we can really, I think fit in and help people. So.
Okay. So let's talk about, then you talked about non-operative. So what are the kind of things that you do? Say I come in and, you know, I work out regularly, but gosh, my hip just is, it hurts and it's keeping me from doing the things I want to do. What would you do for someone like me?
Absolutely. So we say non-operative orthopedics. And what does that really mean? It's comprehensive, meaning head to toe, right? So it could be concussions. It could be I sprained my ankle, it could be a broken bone. If it doesn't need surgery, that's non-operative. And the comprehensive part means we're doing it all. And so you mentioned hip pain. And so what that's going to look like is, you know, somebody calls in and says, my hip hurts, I need to see somebody. We'll bring you in, we'll do a physical exam assessment, just like you're going to an orthopedic provider. And then we're going to talk options the same way they do. My options will include everything up to surgery, essentially, where we look at all of the conservative things. We recognize that surgery is potentially, you know, down the future, or maybe even if we have that discussion that, you know, hey, unfortunately, I think surgery might be the only option for you. It's one of those things that we're going to have an open-minded discussion where, in my practice at least, the patient is going to make that decision with me. As far as I look at it, I work for you as the patient. It's my job to give you the options and help you make a decision that works well for you. So that hip might be, you know, hey, I noticed that your glutes aren't firing relative to your quadricep muscles. So the muscles in your buttocks aren't working quite as well as the muscles in your thigh. We need to get that balanced out. So let's try some physical therapy. I'll give you some home exercises. You stick to them. Come back and see me in a few weeks. Let's see where we're at. And hey, maybe it still hurts. And do we need to talk medications, injections, things like that? So we kind of run the gambit on services and things we can provide to patients.
Because I think when people think of orthopedics, they think of joint replacement. It's the joint that needs, and that's where the pain comes from. But the pain can come from muscle imbalance, you know, maybe a muscle tear, something with ligaments. So it's not always the joints and the bones, correct?
Absolutely. And even if there are bone and joint problems, especially the hip, the knee, that ends up changing the way people move, which then changes the way their muscles work, and it changes the way that they're walking on a daily basis. And so there's a lot of corrective action that has to happen while keeping pain under control, of course, to try and help people. Even if they had to go have that knee replaced or that hip replaced, we need you to be doing well afterwards too. And so there's a lot of work that goes in on the front end that can be physician and physical therapist directed to try and help improve those outcomes, even if you do have to have surgery.
So you talked about injections, and I know anybody who's had maybe a joint replacement recently probably had to start with some injections. Maybe that's because of insurance or, you know, just to start people conservatively rather than going straight to surgery. So what kind of, when you're talking injections, what are people getting?
Good question. So it depends on the body part, but in terms of what I'll inject, let's just talk places you can put a needle. Okay. So all of my injections are done, pretty much all of them, I should say, under ultrasound guidance, meaning I have an ultrasound machine, the same thing that you'd go to an OBGYN and they'll put it on your tummy to see if, you know, boy or girl. This is the same thing. I'm using an ultrasound, though. Instead of looking for structures like that, I'm looking at, you know, maybe it's the tendon, maybe it's your joint, maybe it's, you know, say a labrum or something like that. So we can look at a lot of these different structures to know, one, it gives us a visual representation of what does that tissue look like. But two, it improves the accuracy of my injection. It generally feels better for patients, too, because it's one poke right down to that area. And so nobody likes getting a shot.
Yeah.
But if you were going to pick a way to do it, I'd rather the one where I'm not poking around blindly or feeling my way through. I can watch it and make sure it's going right down to that spot. In terms of what we're injecting as far as medications and things like that, again, it's a wide variety and it depends on what does the patient want and what are viable options to help get that area feeling better. So we'll do things, even just sometimes normal saline can help to open a space up to give a nerve maybe some more space to move, things like carpal tunnel or cubital tunnel symptoms that cause numbness and tingling in the fingers. We can hydrodissect is what that's called. We talk things like my arm hurts when I try and pick stuff up out in front of my body and we think it's your biceps tendon or that big muscle at the front of your arm. Well, we can go right down to that tendon sheath and put a little steroid around there to calm down irritation in that tendon sheath. We can do the same thing into joints where we're putting steroids. So steroids are pretty common. Mm-hmm. Certainly, they, depending on who you talk to and what you read, you can get different reputations as far as steroids are concerned. But in this case, it's let's calm that irritation down right at the source. But we can go beyond that. There's lots of new, what we call orthobiologics that are being studied. It's certainly a work in progress, but there's good data to support things like platelet-rich plasma or PRP. It's one of the real hot topics in orthopedics in general, but certainly the non-operative world, where we're pulling blood from your own body. We're able to spin it down and it will separate into different layers based on how much it weighs. And the layer that has all the platelets with good healing growth factors and other chemical messengers that tell your body, hey, we need to fix a problem. And under the ultrasound, I can go put that medicine right there. So if it's a strained hamstring tendon, if it's a knee that has some arthritis and we don't want to try steroids, we want to try another option. But we run, again, other options too. Putting what's called visco supplementation, or some people have heard of it as rooster comb or hyaluronic acid. So it's basically a joint lubricant. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, the other big one that people talk about is, we don't call them stem cells. That's what you'll read about online. But it's basically taking undifferentiated cells from your bone marrow. So we under ultrasound, put a bunch of numbing medicine in, and go harvest a little bit of bone marrow and put those cells right at the source of the problem. And the idea being they provide a scaffolding to help come in and heal whatever tissue is injured.
Because so, I'm not a doctor, but what I've heard about stem cells is they can turn into lots of different things.
That's the idea. Yeah. So I think we owe it to patients to be transparent. And along that, I would say there's certainly some evidence supporting what we call it BMAC, but it's a bone marrow aspirate. I would say that PRP probably has a little more data and is frankly more affordable for a lot of our patients, but there's certainly an option, and I would never turn someone away or say, no, we can't do that. If you want to try it, I'm open to it, mm-hmm. because again, it's our job. We owe it to our patients, I think, to work together to come up with a care plan that works for them.
So what's the difference between giving that injection under ultrasound versus X-ray is the other way it's done?
Sure. X-ray, as we've all seen pictures of X-rays, mm-hmm. X-rays show us the bones, right? And so what X-rays doesn't allow us to see is the soft tissue. So soft tissue is things like skin, muscles, veins, arteries, nerves. Ultrasound allows us to see all of that. And that, I think, is the big difference. And there's certainly a place for fluoroscopy or X-ray. I use it in my practice occasionally for some shots. But the thing I like about ultrasound over X-ray, one, there's no radiation with ultrasound. While fluoro doesn't have a lot of radiation for most procedures, every little bit you can cut out is probably reasonable to do. The other piece is what we call dynamic ultrasound. If you tell me, hey, I get this popping in my hip whenever I do this certain motion, you know, getting into or out of my car or something like that, X-ray, you're not going to be able to see that soft tissue and have the patient be moving. With ultrasound, I can hold it onto that hip. Sometimes it's the hip flexor, sometimes it's the bursa, whatever it may be, but I can hold it there while the patient's moving back and forth and showing me that motion, and we can watch what is that structure that they're describing that's popping, snapping, and causing this discomfort. So dynamic ultrasound is certainly a plus over fluoroscopy. But then again, just looking at all the soft tissue stuff, the nerves, making sure you're not going down through something that you don't want to put a needle into. Yeah. So
I would imagine that gets to be painful. Whoops, not there. Yep, not
exactly.
There. Let me a little to the right.
Exactly.
Because are most of those injections going into some sort of soft tissue? You're not usually injecting something into a bone, are you?
No, there is an emerging field of trying to put PRP, like we talked about before, into certain bony lesions. But typically where I'm going will be joint spaces. They'll be next to bones. We can do certain, say, nerve blocks around the knee, where you are right up next to the bone. And they can technically be done under fluoro. But again, there's an artery that lives by that nerve. And I don't want to put a needle and subsequently put a bunch of medicine into that artery. And ultrasound allows me to make sure I'm not doing that. So I think that offers a lot of advantage. It's just a matter of making it available and accessible to people. So
do you have people that come in and say, Dr. Bates, I just want a knee replacement. I don't want to go through all these injections. I just want it done.
It will happen.
It will happen.
And the way that I always phrase it to patients is, I'm not going to ever tell you that you have to have your knee replaced. That's not my place. Again, going back to this point of, it's between us as a team, myself and the patient, to come up with a plan that works for them in particular. And so if you came in and you told me, I'm ready, let's make this happen, I think I owe it to you to ask you, well, what have you tried before? And if the answer is nothing, it hurts, I'm ready to be done with it, we probably have a discussion of, I'm not going to tell you you can't. Your insurance might make it a little tough for you, but but most importantly, it's a matter of, you know, nothing we do is risk-free, whether that's taking a medicine, whether that's doing an injection, or whether it's doing surgery. But if we look at risk versus potential reward, you know, certainly an injection is quick. It's relatively pain-free compared to surgical recovery and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I might talk to you about, you know, hey, we have some other conservative options if you're interested in trying it. And if not, again, I'm not here to tell you you can't have your knee replaced, but I'd want you to talk to one of my surgical colleagues to make sure that they agree that that's the right option for you and are able to go through with that. So nothing's ever risk-free, but in my opinion, hey, shouldn't we start a little low risk first and see if it can help?
Well, and I would think if someone's a little younger, I mean, new joints last longer than old ones, but you also have to think about the timing of that. You don't want to give someone a joint replacement when they're low 40s, early 40s, and then you may have to have another one when you're 70 or 80.
It's certainly something that goes into that consideration, mm-hmm. and my orthopedic surgeon colleagues will be much better versed in the numbers and things like that. But I would agree, Lori, it's something that you consider when you're having that discussion of, I hear you that you're interested in a replacement. We just need to make sure that we're considering all factors around it. There's certainly a place, and sometimes it has to happen when people are that young. But let's make sure we're having a good, well-rounded discussion that looks at all of our options.
And these injections, is there a time, I mean, can you only do so many of them, or can people get them for a few years, 5, 10 years, just keep getting them?
Great question. That is where that bad rap that I mentioned that steroids uh-huh. get can come into play.
It's not the same steroids as what a weightlifter
That's correct.
Uses.
It is okay. not the same steroids. No, this one is designed to shut down irritation and inflammation, so help with pain, help with swelling. But we do know that even too much of a good thing can be a bad thing, and steroids are no exception to that rule. And so we do have some limits. Typically, we say every 3 months or so is about as often as you can do a steroid into a joint space. And the worry is that too much of it slows down your cartilage growth and can actually thin it out. There's not a lot of great data showing it in real patients. However, there is some data in laboratory studies that says that can happen. And so in the interest of being cautious, about 3 months is your limit in terms of how often you can do steroids, with a couple exceptions. In terms of the visco or the gel supplementation that we talked about to try and lubricate, say the knee is the most common spot currently, those depend a little bit on insurance coverage, but it's typically every 6 months. And they tend to work pretty well in those patients where they're going to be effective. So they're not maybe going to shut off irritation and inflammation as often as steroids do, but in the patients where it does work, it tends to last longer than steroids have. Mm-hmm. So there's certainly some benefits to that. So lots of options, and the rules in terms of how often, some's dependent on insurance, but some of it's just dependent on, hey, we want to make sure that we're taking care of the joint or the tissue that you have there and not putting too much of this medication too often.
All right. So we've talked a lot about the injections, but Dr. Bays, I want to talk about other reasons that people may come in and see you.
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, the way that we're building my schedule is such that, you know, if there's pain anywhere, it's something that we can look at. And so a lot of times that is arthritis, and we'll talk options, but boy, there's a lot of other reasons too. Things like, I rolled my ankle during my football game Friday night, and I just feel like something's wrong about it. It's worse than it has been before. Or I fell playing with Big Brother and my wrist hurts. What can I do? And so whether it's concussions, it could be broken bones, it could be sprains, strains, or just as simple as it hurts. We've all had back pain at some point. And different providers have different opinions on back pain, but it's one of those that's so common that I think I owe it to patients to be there as a potential route for treatment or at least having that discussion of what's the next step. So back pain is certainly a good reason to come in and talk to a physician, because we have a lot of conservative options that are shown to help people quite a bit. But we'll do a little bit of even some athletic performance consultations and things like that as well. So just that idea of trying to provide a comprehensive and well-rounded program that covers everything head to toe. It could be injections. It could be just a diagnostician type role. Or it could be, hey, we're going to get you to be a better athlete. So we run the gambit there as well.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about pain. Say you do something. When should you see someone for pain? Because we've all had pain. We don't want to be running to the doctor like, oh, I hurt myself yesterday and I'm pain and I'm going to the doctor.
No, I agree. Nobody likes going to the doctor. I totally understand. In terms of when to make that call, some of that to me is a case-by-case or patient-by-patient situation. Nobody's ever going to know your body as well as you do. And so I don't think it'd be nice if we had a hard and fast rule that patients could follow, say, hey, this doctor said, you know, 2 weeks or something like that. Unfortunately, it's hard to know. And sometimes there's things that are going to be more serious than others. For example, you know, you mentioned a cyclist, let's say. What if it's a bad fall that caused the pain and they're actually dealing with a broken wrist or something like that? Well, for me to try and say, oh, wait 2 weeks, put some ice on it, see what happens, well, that's clearly the wrong choice. But if it's the, you know, I've noticed this pain building up over a few weeks, it, you know, bothers me in my knee, I've given it a chance, tried a little medication over the counter, it's not getting better, certainly not outside of being reasonable to come talk to a physician about it. And so the nice part about sports medicine or any of my ortho colleagues is that, you know, that's what we're here to do, is assess that kinetic chain, the bones, muscles, tendons, ligaments, how does it all fit together, and where's that hiccup that's causing that pain. And so I wish I could give you a perfect come in at 1 or 2 weeks, and no, it's I trust my patients. They're gonna, you know, your bodies. And so if it's nagging, if it's bugging you, or something just doesn't feel right about it, let's take a look at it and see what's going on together.
Okay, so let's switch gears again. Let's get into a little bit of sports medicine. You being an athlete your whole life, what about, there's a lot of, we're in an area where, you know, traveling sports is very popular. We're building a huge sports complex here. We've got another one in Charleston. So, you know, young kids playing sports year-round is really common, not different than when I grew up in the 80s. So what advice do you have for parents whose kids are playing sports year-round and they're worried that my kid is, you know, he's pitching a lot, they're going to wear out their joints before they're 18?
That is a fantastic question, and one that is
we're going to do another podcast just on that topic.
Perfect.
But I want to,
yes, because it is a hot topic, and it seems like everywhere you turn, somebody has an opinion, whether that's a friend on Facebook or something you read from a star athlete, you know, in the major leagues or something like that. What we know is that there's plenty of good data supporting lower injury risk, better overall athletic status, and a myriad of other benefits from having our children be well-rounded, playing multiple sports. That doesn't mean they can't be involved in things year-round, but we need to make them different things. Your perfect example of the baseball player, the Little League baseball player who plays on 3 or 4 different traveling teams throughout the year. Maybe they're a pitcher and they're pitching 10 or 11 months out of the year. Well, we know that they're at risk for having things in their shoulder, their elbow, and so we've got some pretty good data as far as, you know, they need 3 months off minimum each year from really throwing in general. And so it's going to be varied a little bit based on sport in terms of where those stressors are. We think knees with basketball and things like that. But I want kiddos to be playing. I want them to be enjoying that because, frankly, I think we've all seen the benefit of sport in our lives in one way or another. So I would never try and rob a child of that opportunity in terms of my recommendation for how much they can or can't play. But we do need to be very smart, I think, in terms of making those decisions and not just blindly throwing them into whether we play baseball, basketball, anything year round with no breakup, no change in how we're stressing their bodies. Because you're right, they're certainly at risk of overuse injuries and even mental stress and burnout if we're not alternating and switching things up for them. So it also, just from a social standpoint, we look at the connections built through sports. Let's get them on some different teams, meeting new people, making new friends. So lots of good benefits. Still handle it as an individualized situation because there are different kids who are going to be into different activities. Mm-hmm. But being well-rounded, certainly, if we're talking college scholarships and things like that, let's have a realistic discussion and make sure our goals are appropriate. If that's what you want to strive for, I'm here to help you do it. But we need to make sure we're being smart and giving you the best chance. And a lot of that comes to being a well-rounded athlete and not a single sport or single focused athlete.
Sounds like some great advice. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we wrap it up for this podcast? But we're going to have Dr. Bays back because there's lots we could talk about with you.
We have just scratched the surface, I think. So, no, I appreciate you having me. Very excited at this opportunity here and getting the sports medicine side of things up and rolling here at the Mattoon campus. So it'll be a lot of fun.
All right. Well, I'll give you more information at the end of the podcast, how to learn more about Dr. Bays and Sarah Bush Lincoln. So thank you for joining us today.
No, thanks so much for having me, Lori. I appreciate it.
That's our podcast. We thank you for listening. Remember, the information we present in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be considered a substitute for medical care. Be sure to speak to your healthcare provider about your health needs and concerns. To learn more about the services and providers at Sarah Bush Lincoln, including Dr. Bays and our orthopedics program, head over to our website at sarahbush.org. That's Sarah with an H. Until next time, I'm your host, Lori Banks, for Health Styles, and I hope you have a great day.